Welcome to Hacking Postgres, a podcast about extensions, extension creators, and other interesting, innovative things in the world of Postgres. I'm Rye Walker, founder of Tembo, a managed Postgres company, and today I'm here with Dennis Magda. I was going to say Magna. It's definitely Magda. Hey, welcome to the show, Dennis.
Absolutely. And happy Monday.
Thank you.
Are you recording this on Monday? And look at us. Yeah, already very energized to move things forward this week.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Well, I usually like to, usually I don't have a good background on, you know, where you came from, where you grew up, what were you doing before Postgres? So I'd love to just, you know, hear a little backstory on what you were doing before Postgres.
I would say that the last 2 years, I've been working with Postgres on a daily basis because I'm part of the YugaByDB team, and YugaByDB basically creates a distributed database that is built on Postgres. So that's why my day-to-day job is, you know, working with YugaByDB community and as well as with the Postgres community, because we think that YugaByDB belongs to a broader Postgres family. However, my first encounter of Postgres probably was almost 15 or 18th year ago. I was a, you know, fresh graduating student who was doing his first steps in high tech, and I joined a team that was building a social network. That was the time when Facebook became the thing, and there were so many companies around the world trying to double down on their success. Everyone wanted to build their own social network. And I worked for a company that was creating a social network, but for a specific user segment.
Yeah.
At least those were not trying to compete to Facebook. They just saw that Facebook became very successful and they wanted to do something else, but for their audience. And we were creating I was a Java developer. I was responsible for the backend written in Java. And it happened that we've got a talented DBA and administrator on our team. And he selected Postgres because those days I knew that Postgres existed, but most of the users, most of the dev teams, they would pick MySQL if they wanted to use something from the open source world. But it happened that at that company, for some reason, the DBA group wanted to use Postgres, and Postgres was not as famous as it today.
Yeah.
And they were using Postgres. And Postgres turned out became my first database that I used for a real production workload. And what's interesting, how is it related to distributed deployments, to distributed databases, distributed Postgres? Our Postgres deployment was sharded. We were not running a single Postgres instance because our traffic volume was so high that we had to run three Postgres standalone servers, and we created our own proxy, our own coordinator. So those days we did not have Citus data or any other extensions that would let you just to deploy a sharded Postgres. So like that was my first Postgres. That was my first production level database, and that production level database was a sharded Postgres.
That's awesome. Trial by fire, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Where were you? What were you? You said, what was the name of the social network? I'm kind of curious. It sounds like it was having at least some success, right?
I don't know. It was called, iSocial or something like that. It was in Eastern Europe.
Got it.
It was used for those who like, you know, some specific community.
Yeah.
You had the traffic was big. It was not huge.
Yeah.
But it was big, and we had to follow, you know, the best practices that were published by Facebook, because Facebook also was running, they were probably running sharded MySQL, if I'm not mistaken. And they were also explaining, let's say, if you want to run your database configuration as a sharded option, then you need to minimize the volume of joins. And we also were following some of the best practices by Facebook engineers trying to build our own version of sharded Postgres.
Yeah. Well,
and it worked out really well. It worked out really well those days.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I started using, I don't remember when I started using Postgres for sure, but I would say that I was a Ruby on Rails developer, and Ruby on Rails just kind of treated Postgres as default for production. You know, it was probably just like commented out in their config file, and it's like, all right, Postgres it is. Or, you know, Heroku, you know, made it really easy to use Postgres too when it first started. So it just seemed like the default. I'm a big PHP hater. So, you know, LAMP stack has MySQL and PHP paired up. So it was automatically, it's like the, you know, the enemy of my whatever is my, you know, it's like, oh, if you're friends with, if MySQL and PHP are friends, then I must not be able to be friends with MySQL. So, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It really depends what was your very first experiences.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone and we had just the general conversation. Let's say why if to talk about SQL, you have to put Postgres aside, like SQL as the language that we use to communicate with relational databases. So right now I would say that there are many of those who love SQL.
Yep.
And there are also those who don't think that that's a very friendly or useful language. Why? Because if to talk about my generation, my first data access language was SQL. I was studying it at university.
Yep.
My first database was Microsoft Access. Then we used Oracle and then we used something else. Yep. Then I used Postgres at my first paid job. And eventually I was learning SQL and I did not have any other choice those days. And that's why right now I don't have anything against of SQL. And I would usually encourage people using SQL. At the same time, we have another generation of developers who probably no longer study SQL as much as I did.
Yeah.
Because they probably don't have that much of SQL on their curriculum. That might happen.
Yeah, you were pre-ORM, right? Like you were using it before there was an ORM. You had to know it.
Exactly. So those habits and those skills that we gained during our first days as, you know, technical professionals, developers, they truly influence our attitude towards the technology in the future.
Yeah, it's crazy. When I, you know, when we started Tembo and I started caring a lot more about, you know, the actual looking directly at the database. I mean, I just remembered 20 years ago, I was writing crazy queries. I felt like that was totally in my past, you know, and that, you know, I was never going to be down at the SQL level again, but here we go. It's kind of like the rise of SQL, I think, to some degree. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. Have you gotten involved in extensions or, you know, I think at like Yugabyte, are you DevRel at Yugabyte? You seem to be DevRel, on Twitter at least, but maybe you're just a very social developer.
I'm a DevRel guy. I am the head of DevRel, so I'm responsible for this group at the company.
Yep.
Why DevRel? Because for me, DevRel is kind of, it requires you to be an engineer, but an engineer who has to get out of the building and talk about a technology and help to adopt this technology. I've been working, you know, as a DevRel guy for the last 5+ years, if not more, like as a full-time job. However, my first paid job, before that paid job that we have just discussed, like as a software developer who was building that social network, when I was at the university, I got an offer from Sun Microsystems. And I worked as a Sun Campus Ambassador at my own university. The role required me, you know, just, hey, Dennis, here is a list of Sun technologies like Java, NetBeans, Solaris, you name them. And your goal is just popularize them. Make sure that all the students from your university not only know, but also use it. And my job was, I was studying Java and I was growing as a Java developer. That helped me to learn Java much more rapidly, invest more of my time and effort. And also it required me just to communicate Java. I was hosting meetups, local conferences. We created our own local group. We had a few projects. Some of those projects were demonstrated at Java One and other conferences. So that was so exciting. And since that time, I was always thinking that, probably like I will continue. Like once I graduate, I will keep working as a software engineer because I want to become more skillful. I wanted to build and develop Java because I wanted to see how Java functions from inside. But I knew that at some point in my time, I will get bored because my personality is that I loved, you know, to build stuff.
Yeah.
But I cannot spend, you know, 365 days a year, you know, just sitting in front of my laptop and, you know, coding. I just feel that, you know, rush. I need want to get out. I want to see people. I want to talk to people. I want to educate people. And eventually at some point of time, I, you know, got back on that road and started working as a DevRel guy.
Yeah.
So in Yuga by DB, yeah, like in Yuga by DB, that's my second company where I work as a head of DevRel.
So how did you get paid in college? How do they pay you for the for pimping their tech? Was it just a flat amount of money, or was it?
It's like, yeah, it's a flat amount of money. I was a part time employee. I had my own Sun ID,
oh, yeah.
And I was paid, and that was excellent because I also was getting extra cash. And, you know, like if you're a student and while you study, it's wonderful if, let's say, someone is paying you for something that you are learning right now.
Yeah,
and
that's a smart idea. Are you guys doing that at Yugabyte right now?
And yeah, like Yugabyte also pays me.
No. I'm saying, are you guys paying, you know, the idea of like, you know, paying college students to spread it in their university is a pretty good idea, you know?
We don't have this program,
yeah.
And I don't know actually if any other big high-tech companies do this, because I was part of the Sun Campus Ambassador program.
Yeah.
So basically Sun would partner with, like during the last days of Sun, like we had probably 85 universities worldwide, and every university had one of those ambassadors. So like Sun would not partner with a university, they would partner with a student from that specific
right.
university. And that was a network, that was a community of various universities where you have an ambassador.
Yeah.
That worked really well. And that helped, let's say, just to feel and share the beauty of that open source spirit. Because
yeah.
Sun, like we know that, you know, financially the company unfortunately ended up badly.
Yep.
But from the open source culture, that's probably one of the best school you can, you know, be a part of, and that influenced me a lot. And actually, you know, what's interesting is that when I was thinking to joining Yugabyte, if you take a look at our advisory board, Scott McNeely, he is one of the company advisors. He knows like us really well,
yeah.
And he actually pitches Yugabyte DB whenever it's possible. And that also was an extra check mark for me. Scott McNeely was a co-founder of Sun Microsystems. I knew him as a like that employee
yeah.
back in the days, and I said, all right, like if he believes in this company, then it's an extra, you know, plus.
Yeah, it was a sign, right? Connect that
yep,
dot.
Yep.
That's great. So have you done work on you know, contributing to any Postgres extensions or features at Yugabyte? Like, have you had a chance to kind of get your hands dirty into the Postgres ecosystem?
Yeah, most of my contributions to Postgres, just if to do a step back
yeah.
first, right? As long as Yugabyte DB is built on Postgres, company, not only in, like company gives you green light, you know, just work with Postgres.
Yep.
If you need to create some content or you need to create an extension that will benefit the entire Postgres community, then you're good to go. Because we think like our mantra is that, and like my mantra at least in the DevRel team, if we are helping Postgres, then we are helping to push Postgres further. And then some of those Postgres users will eventually pick, you know, say Yugabyte DB, same as they would pick Tambo, Amazon RDS or whatever.
Yeah.
Like we have many options. It's good that we have so many companies pushing Postgres forward.
Yep.
And most of my contributions as a DevRel guy, I mean, like I like just to, I look at Postgres as an application developer. Which means that I understand internals really well, but I'm not the guy who is interested too much on like how to fine-tune logical replication or how to properly configure, let's say, outer Wacom, or how to like all those administrative tasks, and it just is beyond my zone of interest.
Yep.
I'm looking at Postgres as an application developer. Let's say I have this database and I want to build something, right? And then I'm just looking at the list of extensions and start doing this, something. And my contribution usually is I want to inspire developers on how to use Postgres for various applications. It can be, you know, something that is quite popular right now, like GenAI or AI applications. We also have, you guys also created Vectorizer, right?
Yep.
Extension. You create extensions. You have your own excellent repository with various extensions. Yeah. And this is, I usually brag about this. And then I create some content that not only popularizes, but also shows, you know, how exactly to do it. However, from the coding perspective, as a developer, probably half a year ago, I created an extension. I called it PG Compute. And what this extension allows you is to execute some logic on Postgres end straight from your development environment. So we know that Postgres has support, let's say. So presently the extension supports JavaScript.
Yep.
And we know that Postgres has an extension that allows you to write and execute stored procedures in JS and JavaScript.
Yep.
However, what I don't like about the whole kind of ecosystem of their languages for extensions is that experience is not the best.
Right.
What I, as a JavaScript developer, have to do if I want to run my stored procedure, I need to write this code. Then I need to ship this code snippet to my database server somehow. Then I need to install this extension. Then I need to install this stored procedure. And only then from my application, I will call this stored procedure.
Yep.
There are so many steps.
Yeah.
Let's say that, yes, I created the first version of my extension. I deployed it and now I can execute it. But then I need to optimize it. And I repeat this process one more time. I need to update, ship, update, execute. And my extension, PG Compute, what it does, you just write your code in your Visual Studio Code or whatever you use. Then you click Start button. And if it sees that this function can be executed on the database, it just takes and sends this function to the database and executes it there. So it's like just one click and the logic runs. And this is what I like as a developer.
Yeah.
If you want me, I know like there is a debate in the development community and DBA community whether we should use stored procedures or not. I'm the guy who thinks that you can use and you need to use stored procedures, but it's all about finding the right balance because you don't want to move all your application logic to your backend. But if there is a chance that like if you move this logic to the database, it will give you, let's say, 2x or 3x or whatever improvement in terms of performance, then do this. The question is, what's the most efficient and developer-friendly way of doing that? So that's my, that's one of the extensions that I contributed to the ecosystem. And that's the client-side extension. So it depends on the, what's the name of that JavaScript extension? On the JavaScript extension support on the server side, and they just work together.
Like I don't know, PLv8, maybe, I think, might be different.
That's right.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that there's, I think like, to me, it sucks to hand code stored procedures. You know, it feels like, especially if you used to do it 25 years ago when with Microsoft SQL Server, you remember the hell of like, you know, just really bad. There was no code management. A lot of times, you know, people were just like typing stuff into the database and, you know, there were no tests, all that kind of stuff. So I feel like if it could be a little bit magical and testing, you can write tests around it. That's what developers want. They definitely want the ability to possibly write tests. Not that they do it, you know, but like they want to know that there is a path to being hygienic. I'd say that the traditional, you know, way a lot of people use databases is pretty gross, you know, where they just go in and hack it. And, you know, I've done that myself. Last year, you know, just, I want to create a view, you know, like I want to, you're playing around with stuff. So you just type the code and you run it on the server and it's not stored anywhere. And then somebody else later on is like, what all did you run there? I'm like, I don't know. So that's one of the things we're trying to do is basically create a good way for developers to develop all that, just everything, including schema, migrations, stored procedures, functions, all locally in their browser or in their text editor, ability to run all that code locally with the exact same software that's running in our SaaS. You can run it on your computer and then push it to the SaaS, you know, with confidence, and have a full like get backed, you know, history of how it's changed. Like that's the way I think that should be standard, but You know, normally you have to use some sort of application software to get that flow. You know, normally if you just grab Postgres by itself, you just jump into Postico or some tool and you're just kind of hacking it directly. You know, direct link interface to the database is, I think, kind of a bad thing. I think that there should be a little bit of an abstraction between you and the database that's got source control part of it. What do you think of that?
Yeah, this matters a lot for developers. I mean, the whole experience. When we live in this, we live in this cloud native era when almost you're creating some application or new service, but eventually it's going to be deployed on AWS, Azure, or like somewhere else, right? You might pick one of the cloud, like one of the SaaS options. But still, I think that I might sound like a dinosaur, but when I'm kind of doing my first baby steps with an application, I want to have things local.
Yeah.
Even if they are eventually going to be deployed on some remote database server that is, let's say, managed by Tembo or managed by anyone else, I still want, let's say, to go offline sometimes because I might be traveling. I can go here, I can go there. And I want to have, don't ask me to connect there. Just if it's possible, let me just run my code there. Yeah. I already have my machine. And my laptop already comes with, let's say, like 16 CPUs. And it has already almost a terabyte of memory. Why would I pay, let's say, to that cloud provider if I can just run, like if I need to create this, you know, very first prototype? And this is exceptional when, let's say, you can just have that stack that is very developer-friendly.
Yeah.
As for the security, security, what I don't like is that there are many SaaS products these days. And some of the SaaS products, they take shortcuts by letting you just, that's the IP address and go and connect.
Yeah.
And they can shoot in their own leg by doing that because you just want to make sure that everything is secured, authorized, you know, authenticated. And sometimes if nobody asks me to take an extra step during, let's say, the account creation or let's say your database cluster creation, then I would be suspicious about that. So it's also about the balance because many developers also developed a habit of looking at a database as an URL, as an address, which means that I'm clicking a few buttons and that's my address and I'm connecting to this address. I don't want to bother about anything else. That's why even you're talking about security, about fine-tuned, you know, fine-grained control, then it's an art if you want to make it, you know, still secure, but also as intuitive as possible for developers. But
so maybe just talk about DevRel real quick. You know, it's a kind of a newer it's a startup-y term, right? Like not a lot of companies have DevRel, but are you guys, I'm curious, is your squad involved in sales engineering, like sales opportunities as well as like, I kind of think DevRel is the new marketing for dev tool companies. So there's marketing and sales. I'm curious, do you guys cross over into both of those, or is it really just trying to keep focused on creating content and high level activities?
A short answer is that DevRel is neither sales engineering nor marketing.
Yep.
And DevRel always has its own KPIs that are not mapped to marketing qualified leads or, let's say, sales opportunities. They are just unrelated. At the same time, DevRel as a term, right, it emerged probably during the last 8 years.
Yep.
But before, we always used to have technology evangelists.
Yeah.
You know, those gurus or those kind of happy people, if to put them in quotes, that would travel, let's say, the world and present at various conferences. When I used to work at Sun Microsystems, I was a Sun Campus ambassador. But my role certainly involved evangelism, but we also had full-time evangelists at Sun. And those guys' responsibility was, let's say, just go to a conference, talk about Sun, show how to use Java, inspire developers. Then when you're back home, create some content, tutorials, etc. So these days, we no longer name, like these days when you want to talk about These days, we have developer advocates. And developer advocates are your technology evangelists of the past.
Yeah.
When I look at DevRel, it has usually three goals. And depending... The first goal is like you want to make sure that it's I call it awareness.
Yeah.
And same as in marketing, right? And some of the terms, they will intersect the name, yeah. Like awareness. What it means, like you want developers to learn that your technology even exists.
Yeah.
And here is, we use the same tactics. How can developers learn? They can learn virtually or they can learn in person. If they can learn virtually, then you need to create some content, let it be blogs, articles, demos, etc., or go on social media and just find a way to get their attention.
Yeah.
How is it different from marketing? Because in marketing, we have product marketing, we have digital marketing that have different goals, let's say, to popularize their technology. The style at DevRel team, at least at YugaByDB, communicates, trying to push YugaByDB as, you know, the best technology out there. No, we're just, you know, trying to find, we are developers, or we are DBAs,
yeah.
Those who work on DevRel team at YugaByte. And we know like what developers are struggling with. We are developers as well. And we are coming across different, you know, solutions. We know how YugaByDB users already use us, and we come up with content that shows you, okay, that's problem A and that's how you can solve it. And then probably like if you think you can use Postgres as a solution, or if it makes sense, YugaByDB. YugaByDB can be mentioned in an article or video. Sometimes it cannot be mentioned at all.
Yeah.
Because how can we benefit? Because those who post that article or video, we already work for YugaByDB. And
yeah.
By looking at an author, you can see, you can connect the dots.
Right.
So that's the awareness. And you can present at a conference, or like you can talk at a podcast, etc. Then the second bucket is retention and adoption. Once, let's say, you went to a meetup and you presented, 20 new people learned about YugaByDB and Postgres. And then hopefully, a few days later, those folks who attended the meetup, they would go and try Postgres or YugaByDB. And which means the DevRel team now needs to create some helpful guides and tutorials,
yeah.
etc. for those who already know YugaByDB and Postgres, because we want you to come and we want you to have as little headache and
yeah.
you know, as possible. Just you want to deploy, let's say, YugaByDB on AWS, and you want to use LangChain, and you want to use probably just something like that. You type in the combination, you find the tutorial, and you're ready in 10 minutes. So that's the teacher's desire. So that's why we create, let's say, workshops, webinars, etc., that will help you to grow, to learn Postgres and YugaByDB. And last bucket is community. Because you and I, we belong to the Postgres community, right?
Yep.
Like those who popularize Postgres, we use Postgres, and we want Postgres to be successful because our success also depends on Postgres. And also at YugaByDB, we have the community program. We want those who come, usually people come and they ask questions. But among those who ask, we support them. We need to support them,
yep.
because not we cannot explain everything. We cannot create content for every problem, for every issue, or for every configuration pattern. That's why people come to us and they ask questions. And we will try our best to answer you. Then some of those folks can become our champions.
Yeah.
Like those who will be talking about Postgres, who will be talking about YugaByDB. So we want them to grow. So overall, if just to summarize, from the DevRel perspective, how I usually structure and run DevRel teams is that you have three directions to awareness, adoption, retention, and community. And then you have various tactics like presentations, content, samples, tutorials, workshops. Depending on the direction you're focused on right now, you just do your job. And this is a very interesting job because sometimes you need to stay home and you need to code through the night.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just need to jump on the plane. But I would say, tell those that, like, if you think that this is something like super exciting, no, it's like once you start traveling and then, like, once you go to a fifth conference, then, man, you would love to go back home and you don't want to jump on the plane again. Cause,
if your true developer genes might kick in and be like, I wish I could just put my headphones in and hack for a day, right? Like, it can swing too far in the social, way, I suppose. I think it's also great that you're constantly learning. You know, you're basically choosing a job that Anyone can ask you a question about anything, anytime. They could ask you about the new PG vector index type and like, what do you think? And you're like, let me read a few things and try to form an opinion, you know? There's a lot going on, especially the depth of Postgres as well. You know, you have, it's very deep itself. Then there's the width with all the extensions. You know, I'm sure you get questions about extensions you've never heard of and like, let me jam on it for an hour and let's talk after that, I guess. it's a pretty rich field for learning. That's for sure. So.
Yeah. You usually, when let's say you work as an engineer, developer, at some point of time, you will start going deeper and deeper because you want to become a specialist.
Yeah.
For instance, I would say I'm a specialist in Postgres, and not just in the entire Postgres, but in, let's say, transactional subsystem.
Yeah.
That's why you will be, or you're responsible for indexing, right, for GIST index. And you are becoming an expert in that. That's why you're going deeper and deeper and deeper. If you work as a DevRel, developer advocate, for a while, or DevRel engineer, because like developer advocates are usually travel, but developer advocates are not the only, you know, professionals on the team. You have some community managers, you have engineers like who just, you know, create stuff, build apps, you know, full time. You have content creators, not the content creators, like just some of the developers, they just don't want to speak publicly, but they are wonderful, let's say, educators. Like yeah. You can have university program, or you can have your academy program, and someone needs to create that content. And people will be building it. And that team, you learn it from the width, right? You just, you know, breadth. You have to learn a lot. But usually at some point, you will be able just to focus like on PG vector a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
But primarily, your role is like you just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, you might feel like you went deeper, but like, are you, you know, there's so much more deeper to go. You know, there's getting to become a, you know, to, I don't know. Help them improve their docs, you know, a committer or a contributor of some sort. Then there's committerhood, you know, and like you could, the depths are just, there's just so many layers of depth here that, you know, if you were a committer on many extensions, you are most likely also a contributor to the core, you know, because you don't work on the depths of extensions without coming up with ideas to make core different. So yeah, it's a really exciting area, I think, for, you know, software engineers coming out of college too. I'm really trying to encourage our local universities it's a great career, I think, just to jump into Postgres. Can you imagine doing that from college on? You know, you're going to make a lot of money. You're going to have a lot of opportunity to learn. And there's, we're always looking for great people, you know, who have a passion for it.
Yeah, definitely. Joining an open source project, especially a popular one like Postgres, is a wonderful boost for your, let's say, career as an engineer. And the only one thing that I find difficult across many open source projects I was involved is to find a maintainer or committer who would be supporting you.
Yeah.
Because usually it's not that difficult just to take a look and go and take a look at your list of issues, like Git or open tickets. But then it might take weeks, if not months, to get your pull request reviewed. And that's probably the most challenging part.
Yeah.
Before Postgres, before YugaByDB, I worked with an Apache Software Foundation project. I'm Apache Software Foundation member.
Yep.
And how I earned this merit, I worked with Apache Ignite, and I was contributing to Apache Ignite for almost 5 years in a row. That's a distributed in-memory database. Basically, you also distribute your data, you can store it in memory, then on disk, you can access using key value APIs, you can access using SQL. And during my first 8 months, I was contributing to the database. I was building the discovery layer. It's like communication between cluster nodes, and I was also building the transactional layer. For me, it was easy to get my reviews kind of checked and merged because I was working for a company
yeah.
that was sponsoring, you know, yep. this project. It's like why not? Like, because we depend on Apache Ignite and we want Apache Ignite to grow. That's why they hired me to work on Apache Ignite, etc. But also from inside, I know that we had many wonderful contributors. Some of them were working, like some of them were studying at college. And it would take time. Let's say sometimes they would wait for weeks and they would follow up with us, you know, just to get their tickets reviewed. And then sometimes they would come with their own ideas and they would try to contribute something that did not belong to the core of Apache Ignite.
Yeah.
And then you also were learning that art, let's say, you don't want, you know, just to reject it.
Right.
You still want to kind of be mindful. You want just to support that person. But eventually, when you are an engineer, you already have your backlog. You have to code, you have to test, you have to optimize. And then it's getting harder and harder, let's say, to find those who already know the code base really well. And it's hard to get their time to mentor others. So this is where the disconnect. We have so many open source projects out there, but it might be extremely hard just to become successful, not because you're not skillful enough, but because you need to find someone who will be mentoring you. How is it going actually with your initiative? You said that you are trying to support local colleges and how?
Yeah, I think that actually this weekend we had a startup weekend here in Cincinnati, and we had some people at Tembo help run it. So of course there was some, you know, hey, you should build something on top of one of our stacks, you know? And so it was I think it's good. Like I said, I believe we're doing the kids a great service to have them have a look at and understand how Postgres works in the ecosystem. You know, I think there should be a Postgres class, you know, at some of these schools. Why not? We'll see. But we're just getting started. We have zero DevRel people on the team. We have no marketing yet, so it's very early stages for us. But it's interesting to hear how you guys have approached it, and your background's really interesting with everything. So I'm curious, like, we're going pretty long here. I had a couple questions that I want to know is like, what are some developments in the Postgres ecosystem that you're excited about? Like, whether it's Postgres 17 or later feature, what are you excited to see come down the road?
Director, is one of my favorites. I'm the guy, actually. I know that probably the world is divided right now in two type of people: those who are bullish about AI and those who try to ignore it. I belong to the bulls.
Yep.
I think that. That's already happened, and that's not another, let's say, Bitcoin or whatever.
No.
I truly think that that's going to change our lives, and I like, let's say, that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why Pidgeotter. That's why whenever I have extra time, I would usually go deeper in Pidgeotter and PostgreSQL and Vectorize and other frameworks from the AI ecosystem.
Yeah.
As for the Postgres core, I like everything that is happening with JSON support. I mean, JSON was contributed a long time ago, and in the last release, like 16th, there were, let's say, incremental improvements, and that's important.
Yeah.
Because, yes, Mongo probably was, I think, the first database
right.
that made, like, they had this, not BSON, right? Like JSON, BSON, yeah. They have BSON, but they showed that you can use that version of JSON as a database storage format. I mean, like as a data format. And after that, yeah, like many other databases adopted. I truly love this, that JSON is supported in Postgres and you're getting incremental changes.
Yeah.
Also, I like what's happening with the logical replication. It's like in the last release, now it's possible just to replicate changes between two primary instances of Postgres masters, right?
Yeah.
Before that, as far as I know, it was possible to go in that deadlock when, let's say, one would send an update and that update would be continuously replicated across the masters, which means that eventually Postgres at some point should become more distributed, like internally. Because right now, you need just to have an extension or you need to use YugaByDB, or you need to use some other flavor of Postgres. But it's always good that their core team of Postgres recognizes that it's important, and they're not rushing. They're just doing this step by step and step by step. It will take longer. I know that there was a more significant goal, like just to make Postgres distributed, but it takes more time from the community perspective. But at least if you're doing this step by step, then it's always better. Yeah. So I like that Postgres is improving.
Yeah, I finally understand. Actually, these doing these podcasts have been great for me. I understand now the active, like technically works in 16, but it by design creates conflicts easily. You know, it's not trying to avoid conflicts, and they need to build a tool that basically handles the routine conflicts as the next step. And that's probably not coming in 17, you know, it's whether it comes in 18 depends on whether someone picks it up and works on it. It's interesting too, because like, you know, some of the companies, you know, like Yugabyte or you know, Aurora, like, you know, their competitive advantage is not having that sort of solution in the open source to some degree. I mean, I'm not saying perfectly, but like who's going to pick it up, you know, who's going to pick up that chunk of work that attacks, some of the proprietary alternatives, you know. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if that, it's like, hey, I don't blame a company for not picking it up though if it's tearing down some part of their castle, you know. If you agree with
that. Speaking about Yugabyte DB, it's open source, it's Apache 2.0.
Yeah.
Like every feature of YugaByteDB, including, let's say, enterprise, like X-cluster replication that usually you pay for, everything is free.
Oh, okay.
We earn differently.
Is that new? Has that been that way forever, too, with YugaByte?
I mean, like, probably, I'm with the company for the last 2 years, and since I joined, it already was Apache 2.0. Yeah. They changed this license. The license change predates me. At some point, the management decided, no, we just don't care. We just will make everything open.
Yeah.
Why they did not contribute to Postgres? Because that's a startup.
Yeah, yeah.
The founders of YugaByteDB, they were building the first version of Apache Cassandra, of Apache HBase. They were creating that database for the Facebook Messenger. They were building Oracle.
Yeah.
And then when they were building those databases for high-scale companies, they knew that that would be required for the rest of the world. So that's why they decided to found YugaByteDB, and eventually they picked Postgres as the query layer. But when you just need to run, you just don't have time just to wait and convince the community of Postgres that you need to introduce this hook or something like that. Because YugaByteDB, what's happening with active-active replication, that's the first step, because that would allow you just to replicate changes across primaries, but that would not allow you to shard data. Right. The sharding is the next step.
Right.
We have Citus data, but when you use just standalone sharding, then you need to have coordinator. And that coordinator is your decision maker, and that's your point of failure. If you want just to make it highly available, then you need to use another extension, such as Patroni, which means that if you want to make Postgres truly distributed and scalable, like when you have several primary instances and you distribute all the data, right? And you don't have any coordinator, the nodes can talk to each other to decide on transaction execution, etc. That's a huge effort.
Yeah.
And if Postgres becomes a true distributed database at some point, then it would be required to solve not only the active-active replication challenges, but also how to shard it and then how to take care of high availability. Probably Postgres, I don't know, probably everything will remain as it now, right? But YugaByteDB is just different. We said that, no, we don't want to have coordinator. We want to support Postgres query layer. We want all the tools and frameworks and libraries that we created to Postgres to feel like home with YugaByteDB. But also, we don't want to use coordinators. All the nodes of YugaByteDB, they talk to each other directly. They just that's how they function.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah, I have to dig in deeper. I never checked the licensing on that. I assumed it was not going to be Apache 2. So yeah,
Apache.
Yeah, Apache. It's great. Well, good. It was awesome catching up with you, Dennis. Are you? I know you're online on Twitter. You know, I think we like each other's tweets once a week, perhaps. And I appreciate
it. Yeah.
I appreciate that. And yeah, excited to build that online friendship with, you know, with our team as well. So appreciate you supporting a young startup too. At least with what from a like standpoint. We'll share your Twitter on our post here or on the podcast show notes. And I'm curious though, one last question is, do you listen to podcasts very much, or any recommendations for content, whether it's podcast or anything else?
From the Postgres ecosystem, I do listen Postgres FM, and I do listen Hacking Postgres, because I like, I truly like, you know, some of your guests, and I'm just checking what's coming and what's available and listen, because I have my daily commute. I need to drop off and pick up my kids from school. Yeah. Outside of the Postgres ecosystem, I'm the guy who is very interested in businesses. I mean, like, why DevRel? Because for me, DevRel is both engineering and sales.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. And I like the podcast called Business Wars by Wanderly.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
And the guys did a great job. They just take companies, take like Target and Walmart,
yeah,
or Tesla and GM, or just you want to learn more about AI, what's happening with AI. They just broke down everything into pieces, and they explain you by telling a story. And what, so like if someone is interested, and also what I learned a lot from those stories is that every company had its you know, ups and downs.
Yeah.
Like Target or Walmart, they almost went, let's say, dust.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. And you would never imagine, like, which means that for me, the main summary was, it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Failure is part of every company, whether you're a startup or very established company. The question is, are you capable of, you know, stand up and move forward and, you know, just learn from this lesson, you know, fix all the mistakes. So such podcasts like Business Wars help you,
yeah,
just to develop the right attitude towards what you're doing. Yeah, that's why good luck to Tamba. I know that that's should be extremely hard, especially to do your very first baby steps, but I guys feel that you're on the right track. And I was truly, you know, grateful to you when I, for the first time, I think that when I learned and remember the company name is when I learned about the trunk, about,
yeah,
your repository of extensions.
Yep.
Because I, as a developer, I mean, I don't want to download and compile this stuff. I just want to execute one single line. And that was, let's say, the way how you need to approach developers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
This is the way.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I'll give you my recommendation. Similar is a podcast called Founders, where I don't know if you've ever heard of that one, but it's a guy who just reads autobiographies, usually business leaders, but it can be a little bit, you know, could be anybody, but it's generally business, and just breaks it down and tries to compare it to other autobiographies he's read. He's read like 300 autobiographies, and it's just a nice 1 hour podcast. Recently talked about the founder of Red Bull and how that whole business came together. So you might enjoy that that podcast.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's good.
There we go.
Note it. Right. I will Google for it right now.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Dennis. Great chatting with you, and looking forward to seeing you in person at some point and seeing you on Twitter. Thanks.
Absolutely. Staying in touch. Thanks.